This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
The main feature of the day, of the morning, and it is my great delight to introduce Christine Waring. I've worked with Christine a couple of times in my role here in development, and she has done a great deal of work here at the museum in the past and has participated in a lot of community programs where she's been involved with teaching children how to make hats. She is a professional milliner. She has a studio in the inner city studio in Canberra. She's become one of Australia's leading milliners. So not only have we got the pleasure of working with her here at the museum, but she's also renowned across the country for her beautiful hats that she will talk about that you can see displayed so fabulously here in front of us. So it's lovely to have physical objects. I know the PowerPoint is always the way that we do things, but to actually see these beautiful hats in the flesh is really exciting. And Christine has also bought some raw materials from which the hats are made, so she'll talk a little bit more about those processes in her talk. Christine has worked not only with people in Canberra, but she has also presented her hats at hat festivals internationally. She has made hats for famous people, some of whom include people like Marlene Jeffrey, the wife of the former Governor General Michael Jeffrey. She's made hats for Kate Carnell, for Senator Kate Lundy, just to name a few people that we might all know. She has also designed hat collections for Perry Cutton, the Australian designer label. So you can see she has certainly been working extensively, and her field is really well regarded, and her work is well regarded by many. As I said, Christine is also a lecturer, or I may not have said that, but she teaches millinery at CIT. She conducts a lot of workshops with community, and certainly our involvement with Christine here at the museum has been with her work that she's done with our workshops with children and adults. And in fact, it was about this time last year that we had our fundraising dinner for women in racing, and Christine was a generous participant in that program. So without taking up more of your time, let me hand over to Christine, who's going to delight you with information about her career and her beautiful hats. Thank you.
Thank you, Karina, for the lovely introduction, and thank you all for coming. Is this working? Yes, thank you for inviting me to be part of your Canberra Women's Landmark event. It's very thrilling and honoured to be considered for that. So today I'm just going to tell you a little bit about myself and how I got into millinery. First of all, I just wanted to say that I was born here in this hospital a long time ago. So I've got a very soft spot in my heart for this place and for Canberra. And my mother was born here. So, you know, I feel like I really belong here, this place. So I'm a little bit nervous. So I've got on to my Canberra history. Back in the late 70s, when I was at home with three young children, I was always interested in fashion. And so my husband encouraged me to go and do the fashion course at the CIT, which was called Canberra TAFE Tech back then. And so I did the whole fashion course, and millinery was the last units. And I did 4 years of millinery, and back then, as Gabriel knows, it was more a trade course, like an apprenticeship, and we used to go all day. And when I finished that, I decided what was I going to do now. I wanted to use all my fashion experience, and so I started a business in 1988, and I started out in doing clothes. I was designing and manufacturing skateboard wear. I had these young sons that were into skateboard clothes, but I was just finishing off my millinery, so I decided I was getting orders for millinery and people asking me to do things, teach it and run workshops, so I just found the passion in the millinery. I'd always been interested in fashion, so millinery was just another part of my fashion, and I just love the idea of sculpturing things from materials, small raw materials. I used to do a lot of felt making, which was just taking the raw wool, felting it up and making these little hats, and it's a great thrill to see people walking around in your hats and with a big smile on their face. When I started my business, I set up a studio at home, and then I thought, now I've got to get out here and market all my hats and get clients. So I started off at markets, and the new one in Canberra started off with the old Bus Depot Markets. That was just a new market for people that made things only and no imported stuff. So everybody's wares had to be handmade, and that was a great stepping stone for me, and I picked up lots of clients, and through that I met lots of people, and I was able to run workshops. I wrote articles for magazines, and then I was just able to work from my studio. And then TAFE asked me, would I teach millinery there? So they retrained me to teach adults at TAFE. So that was another lovely adventure in my life. And I'm still there teaching millinery now. And I'm the oldest teacher in the building. And all my bosses are all students that I've taught. And so it's pretty funny. No, but it's very enjoyable and I love going there. And I work with community groups here. I teach with the Majura Women's Group and the Brindabella Women's Group, and they're groups of young mothers that meet every week with their children, and I run one-off workshops with them. I was an artist in residence with the Brindabella Women's Group for 6 weeks, I think it was, at one stage. I've done lots of lovely commissions around Canberra here with the National Museum here, and you'll see some of the work when we have our morning tea. I've got profiles on my work there in little folders, and I was involved with the Dress to Kill exhibition with the National Museum, the National Gallery back. I can't remember what year it was, and we had to make hats to match all the famous designers in the world, and we got to meet Vivienne Westwood and had that big party on the bridge, so that was pretty exciting. And I've done lots of work with CMAG, and during 2013 I was commissioned to recreate this headwear that was worn by Marion and Walter Burley Griffin to a 1928 fancy dress party in Sydney, and it was all made out of reeds and cardboard, and so that was part of their 2013 exhibition they had about sustainability at CMAG. And I also was involved in programs here that year, and the National Capital Authority commissioned me to make a recreation of Lady Denman's hat that she wore to the naming of Canberra in 1913. So, and that's on display over there and still in their little exhibition that they run at Regatta Point. So that was pretty exciting too. So I've done lots of things over the years through my millinery. Lovely things just happen all the time, you know. Every week somebody will ring up about something, and so I'm very lucky to be in this industry, and it just makes everybody happy. So, and one of the biggest thrills in my life was taking part in a hat festival in France in 2004. They have this big, there's a place called Cassard and Sepfons, and it's in the south of France, and it's the where all the, they make all the straw, the straw's all milled there, the materials, and turned into straw braid, and that's where all the, a lot of the materials that we use today come from there, especially straws. And it's the centre of hat making in Europe. And they have this big festival every year. And all these milliners from Europe gather together in for a week in the square of this place in Cassard. You have your own tent and you've got to demonstrate hat making. And I couldn't take all my hats with me, so I said I'll demonstrate felt making. And it was about 35 degrees. It was really hot. I was felting away. And they weren't familiar with the felting, and I had all this Australian merino wool I took over there, and I wasn't planning to sell. It was more a demonstration, and I was representing Australia, and people were wanting to buy it, and it was so hot, and I had some blocks, so I'd felt it and put it on the block and say, come back at 6 o'clock, and it was dry, and they went off with their little felted beanie and cloches that I was doing. And it was just a wonderful experience to be with these other European milliners and to watch things being made in traditional ways. And we had clog makers, and it started on Bastille Day. So they, when we arrived there, a big festival was happening that day, and everybody was dressed in 16th century costumes and big stallions and clog makers and everything on the street, and I just felt I went back in history, you know. And so that was exciting, and to stay with the French family on a farm for the week was just lovely, yeah. And just to make hats for all the different commissions I've had, it's just been really exciting for me, and different people, and I regard all my clients and ladies that wear my hats as all famous. You're all beautiful. And so I do a lot of racewear, and at the moment I'm very busy with the Melbourne Cup, and I sponsor, there's a thing in Canberra called the Canberra Facer Racing, and it's a young girl who represents Canberra Racing, and she's got to go to all the functions for the race course and speak, and you know, she's got all these duties, so I sponsor her and she wears my hats, and then I get and she gets on covers of magazines and things, so I get a lot of promotion out of that. But it's also lovely to work with all these young girls, and I'm just inspired by all my inspiration for all my designs. I just love the history of hats and the evolution of how headwear has just developed, but still using old techniques. And so I'm just always gathering information from... I love lamps and lampshades, so I see a lot of, there's a hat in that, I'll look at that, or squiggly things. So just, my inspiration comes from everything, and a lot from costumes. But today when I'm designing for people, they'll come with their dress and I'll try to pick up something in their outfit, and we'll go from there and find shapes that fit their... everybody's got different body shape, tall, small, whatever. So there's different hats that suit different people. And so we go through that process about, you know, what suits you and how comfortable you feel. And mostly they'll come and say, I hate hats, I've got to wear this to this. I just want a little thing. And they go home with a great big thing, you know. And so the trends for this year are... a little bit what you're seeing here. Hats are coming back in, which is really nice. For a while, big hats went out, and like all the little sculptured pieces came in, which I like doing. I can see one little one there with the white fluted lady here. It's got one that I made for her friend a couple of years ago to go to Derby Day in Melbourne. And but this season, the boater is very big. So, and big 70s hats. So the 70s is making a comeback, so which is nice. And I can see somebody up the back there that's got a hat that I designed for you, didn't I? To represent the big loop that's outside in the... there? Yeah. So it's so thrilling for me to see these hats that I've made a long time ago come out of the cupboard to wear. I'll just talk about... how's the time going? Good?
Yep.
I'll talk about some styles. So I don't know how I'm going to do this. Maybe I might get some people out of the audience to... who would like to come up and try a hat on? Come on. Yeah, please. Come on. Yeah, about five of you. Okay. Yeah. And then I can tell you how best to wear a hat and what suits you. So this little one here is a little pink parasisal and it's worn dipped like this, and so this suits this lady very well, and good proportions. So you want to have a little model? A little walk round? And this one here is made out of cinema. So this one here is made out of a parasisal straw, which is this. So that's called a parasisal capelin, and this is what you start with this. And the black Dior one is made out of a fibre called cinema, which is made out of banana fibre, and it comes in meterage, and then you block it over hats and put it all together. And this little one here, I call my... I actually make these petals out of this braid here, which is a glossy braid, Swiss braid straw, and I sew it all into a big piece, and then I cut petal shapes out, wire it, and make this vine. And so it's pretty involved, but I love doing that. And it's a technique I've developed, and I run workshops with it. I teach at millinery conventions. I forgot to say that. they happen every couple of years, which is part of the Millinery Association of Australia that I belong to. So I've developed this, and so I'm always looking to develop new techniques and programs for people to learn. So there's the boater at the end, and that's my little old boater block that I got in the UK a long time ago, and it's a favourite. And it's made out of another straw, which is called a buntle mat, and it looks like a placemat. And it's just all woven straw, and you wet it and block it over the block and wire it and trim it. And the little one next door with the white loop is made out of the parasisal, and it's a good one. I like to use everything up in my workroom, and so it has the bottom a piece that I sculpt and wire, the little twist on the end. And that one is made from this block here. It's one of my little favourite blocks. It's a two-piece block, so you have to block it in two bits and then put it together. And this lovely lady, I thought I had enough hats, but this is handmade flowers that are made from stiffened fabric, and it's called French flower making, and you use little tools that have got little brass balls on the end, and you heat them up, and so you can make any sort of flower. And this is the chrysanthemum here, and somebody can have that today. Yeah, so you could put that on a headband like that, or on your coat or dress. And so that's made out of a silk dupion in a houndstooth pattern. And this one here is an old straw. They're called, you can feel all these later, it's called paribuntle. And they're beautiful polished straws. And a lot of people will probably remember them, but you can't get them anymore. Or they're rare. And they block up and they have a beautiful sheen. And just the quality compared to this today is, you know, there's no comparison. And when I first started, we used to use the parasisals, and they were called for your yard hat, or, you know, and this was for your good hat, but now all we can get is that. And these little flowers here, I'll bring them down. They're made out of the cinnamon here, that gauzy stuff, and they're little petals that are wide and hand-painted, and you can make flowers for them, you know, make leaves and trims for your hat. So it's pretty exciting. Yes, so I'm happy to have questions if anybody wants one, to ask one.
Does anybody have questions for
Christine
as we're talking?
Do girls want to parade around? My lovely models. So you can see the girls on this side are fairly feminine and that's fairly structured. So I'm sort of caught. All depends what mood I'm in the day. But most of them have a sculptural aspect to them. There's a lot of hand sewing in millinery. So, everyone, that was a good question then I had with this one, the cinema, this Dior style that I call that was made out of the cinema. You still can make it out of a solid straw and use it as a sun hat and get sun protection, whereas you don't get much sun protection for this. It's purely a fashion hat, you know. But it is not a lot of... Mothers of the Bride and Groom like these because they're good in photos. They don't put shadows on your face. And
Can I ask a question, please? You talked about these hats down here. Did you make those or do you buy them like that and then cut them up to make the other hats?
That's a good question. No, this is what I buy and this is what I start with. So these are the... materials for hat making, and this is called a capelin, and then you can get a shape, and this is in a Paris size of straw. Yeah, so they're my materials that I get. So I don't make these, I don't weave them.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you get from a big thing like that to a little one
like this?
Thank you.
So I usually for that, this one here, I would use a Paris sisal straw, but a hood. And the hood's shaped like a hood. A hood shape like this. And so I block the first bit here over the block, like that, and wet it and set it and then cut all this off. And then I use that trim there. I double it and sew it and wire it and then start twisting it. So it's pretty good. There's no wastage in it. And I'm into using everything up in one go. So, I do run a workshop on that, using scraps from your workroom to other milliners. It's my no waste policy on materials. Because millinery materials are very expensive. And so that's what... Often people will say, oh, it's expensive, the finished hat, but by the time you get your materials and your time, it just all adds up, but you never really get all your time back because there's a lot of hand sewing. But and the materials are getting more expensive every year when you go to do your ordering. The prices have all gone up. Less suppliers in Australia, you have to go overseas, postage. It's just getting harder. And there's nowhere in Canberra to buy anything. You can't even get millinery wire or the grosgrain ribbon anymore. Nothing, yeah. It's all cheap and nasty nylon stuff. Yeah.
I just had a quick question, which is my problem is a very large head.
Right.
I walk into hat shops. We had 7 years living in England and I had to wear hats for so many things. And I'd just walk in and say, what's the largest hat you have? And they'd look blankly at me and then they'd find something and it would sit up on top of my head. So obviously you have to cope for all sizes. Is it a machine that stretches them or is it you just steaming them or how do you make a hat fit?
Well, if you came and I measured your head, I've got blocks for all sizes of heads. And so usually the you'll be like a... I go to inches and all my blocks are in inches, a lot of the old ones. So you'll have a smallish head is between 21 inch to 21 and a half, three quarters, and that's about a 55 centimetre. And then an average is 22 inch to 22 and a half, which is 56 to 57. And then the larger head, which is 59 centimetres is to 61, is like 23 to 24. And so we usually fit in those sizes, and I've got blocks in all those sizes. Not my fancy blocks, but standard blocks, you know, square crowns and round. And so I can make a hat to fit your head size. I can also... So if you were to come to me, I would make it to your head size and it'd fit. But I do have a hat stretcher that you can... Sometimes it works. You steam the inside, might take the headbands off and the trims and stretch it out on my head stretcher and then replace your trims. I do that a lot. And you've got a hat stretcher and it's like a big block, solid block shaped in a dome which winds out. Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. And most shops, hat shops, well, there's not many left in Australia. They would always go like 22, 22 and a half. And people's heads seem to be getting bigger. I don't know. I think everybody's just getting bigger, aren't they? You know, like you look back at costumes and the waists were like little tiny things and everybody was smaller. It's all our good food.
I'm interested in the suppliers. When I did millinery, I always had to go to Sydney to Brown Brothers in St Leonard's, and got some beautiful stuff there, but the felts were very expensive. Even 20 years ago, for the Lapin fur, I had to pay something like $35 for a Kaplan. And do you get the good quality felts, or do you have to make your own, or what do you do now, Christine?
No, we can still get the good quality felts, but they've gone up to $60, $65 now. Even up to $80. So to make a felt like these felt Kaplans, and that's not that's Gabriel's talking about these beautiful peach bloom ones, which were called velours. This is just straight fur felt, not a wool felt. They're now about $60 before you start, and if you get a velour, which is beautiful, it's like a peach bloom over your felt, they're more. And some of those Lapin ones that you were talking about, they've gone up to 120. It's ridiculous before you even start, as Wendy knows too. And the hoods, which are the smaller ones, like this that I've made my hat out of, they're up to 45, 50 now. So, and that's before you start. And Browns are now called Hatters Millinery, and the place that Gabriel was talking about, I still support them. They're one of Australia's oldest millinery suppliers and about a third generation business, and now they've gone online. They don't have a shop anymore, so everything's online now. It's really hard to get the colours off the computers, but this particular company will send you out samples, and I've been dealing with them for a long time, and so they're supportive of me and help me and always get your things in the mail the next day. But there's hardly any place you could go into now and touch things and feel them, and it's getting harder. And expensive.
We see the Queen in gorgeous hats and lots of eminent people. Very often they're remodelled. You know, I've actually remodelled some of my own hats.
Right.
Do you do this? Is this a practice that's still continued?
Yes, I remodel hats. I get a lot of requests for remodelling hats. And if I can do it, I will. And just by reducing the brim edge, you know, it might be just a bit last season or a few seasons ago, you can reduce the brim edge, change the trim, give it a refresh and a new size. Sizing's called a stiffening agent that you put on to make the hat stiff after you've blocked them. You want them to keep shape, keep their shape, so you use this chemical called size, which back in the old days was what sent them all mad. It had mercury in it, and that's where the Mad Hatter, and most of them worked down in dungeons, you know, down underneath buildings, and there was no ventilation. And yeah, so you've got to be really careful. And the size we use, they've put some perfume in it now, so it was really potent before, so you knew it was bad, but now it smells nice. So yeah, so I have to keep telling my students, put the mask on. You know, we use ventilator machines at TAFE. Oh no, it smells nice, you know, it's not hurting me, you know what I'm saying? yeah, so I do a lot of revamping and re-trimming, and not only my hats, you know, if they come back with my hat, if it's another person's hat if they want it done or they've bought it somewhere else. Or I give them hints on sometimes how to re-trim it themselves.
Obviously, your week in France fascinated the local people. I'm just wondering if what you got out of it, did your experience in that week change your future designs in any way?
Oh, yes. It was... I made a lot of connections there, so now I'm friendly with a person in Italy. And I was introduced to, yes, I made a lot of good contacts and friendships, and they've come out here, and then if I go away again, I've got more people to look up, and I was invited to other things through that. And I was introduced to a lot of new materials that hadn't come to Australia that they've got over there, and then we were invited to go in behind the scenes into their hat-making factories. And so I saw a lot of stuff that goes on in production of hats as opposed to model millinery, which is what I do. It's the experience was, you know, fantastic. And especially the materials and the context of where to get the materials was another one. And some of them were kind enough to show me how to actually work with it, because there was a material called, I call it Paris cloth, but it's called ginseng here. The suppliers get it. I haven't got anything made out of it. It's hard to block, but it's a nice swirly, stiff fibre fabric, which is really unusual. So that was exciting to find that. And then when I came back in 2004, I hadn't come to Australia, and I took part in a thing in Melbourne, and I made all these turbans and things. So, oh, where did you get that? So that was really, really good too, because then I had something new for my collection that year that nobody else had.
You talked about body proportions and hats. What's a real fashion no-go?
I think, like, short people, not being rude, you know, smaller people, and especially a smaller frame, and putting a great big hat on like this, because she just looked like a little mushroom, you know, makes you look like a little mushroom. And back in the 90s, when Princess Diana really revived hat wearing and fashion, those hats were in, and some of them had the big beefeater crowns. And like they were fashion, everybody wanted them, and you see all these little people stuck under these hats, and you just say, look, just let me reduce the brim a bit, or no, that's a fashion, you know. And or else, like a really tall person and quite big, and if you have a tiny little hat, it's the wrong proportions. But you can wear, you know, you say, but I don't want a big hat because I'm going to be inside. But you can have the little base, but I always run a feather or a quill, and then your eyes are drawn to those two points on the long points, and it just gives the illusion of a bigger hat and just balances your body, the proportions of your shape out. So big hats on little people and small, really tiny hats on bigger people.
Do you do much work on the conservation of hats and in museums, but also wedding hats? For example, I have a wedding hat circa 1976. And when does that work become not viable?
No, I do restoration on hats. When I was involved with the 1913 thing with National Capital Exhibition, they represented political landmarks in Canberra through fashion and costume, and they got a lot of hats for different eras, and I had to restore all them. And I have done restoration on old hats, and I do have a collection of old hats myself that I've not interfered with the design, and but I've just repaired them and re-blocked them. And I do a lot of old wedding hats. People will come with their mother's headpiece or their grandmother's, and they want to use it incorporated into their wedding gear, or wedding hat or headpiece, or they just might want parts of it. So, yes, I do that, and I love doing that because it's exciting working with brides. I do a lot of bridal wear. And once a girl came to me with her mother's feather bouquet from the 70s, and it was in a big plastic bag that had been up in the garage since the 70s and not opened and not opened, and it all just disintegrated and it was all over the place. I had feathers stuck everywhere, and I just had to retrieve some, and she wanted a headpiece for herself and for the bridesmaids. I like doing that. I enjoy doing that.
Could I just carry on with the theme of the feathers, because I've always adored Australian birds and I am always blown away when people come from overseas and just, you know, rave about them, and sometimes I don't think we appreciate them. So have you ever done a collection that sort of features Australian bird feathers? I'm not encouraging hunting.
Right.
But no, I'm just thinking there's so many beautiful colours and combinations of colours, and I just wondered if any of them have inspired you to do a creation round Australian birds.
Not so much Australian birds, but I have made, I should have bought that today. I've got a bird that's made out of all just feathers. We made a bird shape, and it's got a big tail feather, and I wore it on my head to a Melbourne Cup thing one year, and I'm tall, so I couldn't get in the car, so I was driving like this, and then I felt like Big Bird when I walked into the race course, about 100-foot tall. But not with, with Australian mum, but that's the, good idea.
That, just drawing the question to a conclusion up here, but please feel free to continue your questions with Christine downstairs in the members' lounge, where we'll be serving our morning tea. And as Christine said earlier, we've got some of the books that give you an overview of some of the work that Christine has done that she's talked about this morning. But before we go, we've got a very important task, which is to offer our prize for the breakfast. And Christine has also very generously offered to give a prize of the flower that she mentioned earlier as well. So we've got two prizes to give. So first of all, I'd like to invite Christine to nominate the winner for the members' breakfast prize for the Encounters preview. Christine, who do you think? We thought best hatted person for the morning.
It's really hard because there's some I've made here.
Yeah, I don't know whether that counts, yeah.
I can't pick them, can I?
Well, I don't know. Up to you.
Well, I have to say this lady with the little blue hat here, because there's a few here that I've made. And
would you like to stand up? And
you're all lovely, well coordinated. And you look lovely. Hat. And did you make your hat?
There's a bit of a story.
Is there?
Oh, we'd love to hear it. I work with the aged people, and on Tuesday, when I walked into the Tuesday group, they were making hats ready for Melbourne Cup, which I'm doing with my group next Thursday. And on the table was this and two other beautiful hats that belonged to one of our other workers. And so I texted her later and I said, could I please borrow one of your hats because I want to wear one today? I couldn't find the one I wanted to wear. I couldn't find in the house. I think I've loaned it to somebody and it hasn't walked itself back yet. So it's actually a borrowed hat. But I was really taken with it. When I put it on myself, I liked it. And if she would sell it to me, I'll buy it from her. But I doubt she will. So there's a story to it.
That's lovely. Well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Look forward to seeing you at the breakfast.
Okay. Yes, I'm coming.
Lovely.
Thank you all very much.
And so what was our next one?
Our next prize was the lovely flower that you had made that you wanted to offer to the best dressed.
And again, I can't pick my... I can't pick somebody in my... I'm thinking that lady up there with the red... You. All lovely coordinated.
Beautiful. I have altered it to suit the top. It was actually a fawn hat with a trim was fawn, so I got a bit of bi-spining and just trimmed around with a red to match the top.
Oh, that makes it all the more special. Well, thank you for coming and for those ladies that are wearing hats that I made a long time ago and everybody else in their beautiful outfits.
Well, look, if you can all join me in thanking Christine, I'm sure you agree with me. It's been a really informed... And so special, Christine, to see the craft of hat making continuing and the passion that you share with us about the nature and the history of hat making. It's been really special. I'd like to just also mention, if you haven't seen this part of our exhibition, there is a small display of hats by André Pelissier on display on this floor in the Journeys Gallery here. And André Pelissier was obviously a French milliner who came to Australia and brought those traditions of hat making to this country. So it's lovely to see and understand more of that tradition and how the continuity of that. And I also really love the sharing of hats, that actually borrowing and sharing hats is also a lovely aspect of this fashion of hat making and hat donning. And thank you so much for looking so beautiful this morning. Please come down and join us for some morning tea in the Friends Lounge.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.